I like to tell this story because I think that it applies to everybody in this room. And I'm going to tell you how quick things change for our employees in this country, in this job. In the world of courageous leadership or being courageous in your decisions, you have responsibility to take care of your people. We all know that. We heard the chief talk for a few minutes just now. But I want to kind of focus on this $5 for a minute. I want to take you back to a story that happened since I've come back into law enforcement. I'm sitting at a boat ramp in my patrol car. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I've learned after the first time I got burnt not to do a lot of proactive work, to kind of hang out and wait. So I'm waiting on a call, and they come in of a call of a subject with a knife in a bar. So I put my car in drive, and I start driving down the road, and I drive down a four-lane highway. And it's about a 12-mile drive in the county, and so I'm cruising along. I'm doing probably about 95 miles an hour, 2 o'clock in the morning. During that time, the radio comes over, and they said that basically somebody had just been stabbed. So I increased my speed to probably 110. So now I'm rolling pretty fast. They're giving us updates. And the first unit that gets on scene is one of our canine handlers. And when he gets on scene, he says that he needs somebody immediately, step it up, and I've got one at gunpoint. So I increase my speed to as fast as those new Taurus will run, which is like 137 or whatever they'll go. I don't know where they run. So anyway, I'm going as fast as it'll go. So I bail out of my car, I jump out, we secure the one subject has a gunpoint, I run inside, and there's a gentleman laying on the ground, and he has a femoral artery stick. It's been stuck through his jeans, and he's bleeding in this bar, and he's bleeding out rapidly. So we rip his pants off, I gloved up, I shoved my fingers down inside, I'm trying to find a place to pinch, there's nothing to pinch because it severed it off. Fire rescue gets there, fire rescue loads him up, takes him away, and he dies. From the moment that I got the call at the boat ramp to the moment the fire rescue loaded him up and took him out of there was a time of 15 minutes. An average cop in this country makes $20 an hour. So that 15 minutes, they paid me $5. Now I want you to think about yourself, and I want you to think about people in our society. Who else would jump in a car, drive fast, get there, bail out, cuff somebody, just stab somebody, run inside of a bar, stick their hand inside their thigh, try to find something, get blood all over them for $5. Think about that. But here's the most important part of that story. The exact same call happens. Exact same situation. I jump in my car, I'm driving down the road, I'm doing about 95 miles an hour. He calls and says somebody got stabbed, and now I'm up to 115 miles an hour. Then the officer screams for help. Now I'm up to 135 miles an hour. But what I don't know is that Susie down the road, who has two babies at home, has called her mom at 2 in the morning because one of the babies is throwing up, the other one's got a headache, and she's got a headache, and says, Mom, I need your help. So Mom gets sleepy-eyed in her car, pulls out of her side road onto that main four-lane highway, and I T-bone that car at 130 miles an hour. And I kill that lady in that car. What society believe? I never got a chance to get to the bar. I never got a chance to cuff the guy. I never got a chance to render aid to somebody. I never got a chance to help out. If I kill that lady in that car, is my agency going to support me at 130 miles an hour? Yes or no? Come on, guys. No. Is society going to believe I was just doing my job? Yes or no? From the time that call started to the time I got there, to I hit the lady and fire rescue showed up and pronounced her dead or transported and she died, was 15 minutes. And in that 15 minutes, that started with a career and ended with a death, and ended a career, possibly an indictment, I got paid $5. Have you ever thought about that? Have you truly ever thought about the effects on your career? And I tell you this because I'm not talking to you at my level now as a deputy. I'm talking to you as a supervisor, administrator, or upper administrator down the road. Can you tell the truth about what we do in this job? Can you? I'm going to talk about my situation a little bit. I'm going to talk about the courageous side of it. But more importantly, I want you to think about you and the decisions you made and the employees who work for you in your career. And how you're handling those employees. Here's the facts. In Gainesville, Florida, a UF student was shot in the head by the police. The student was shot Tuesday night in altercation with University Police as police say barricaded himself inside a unit of Corey Village. None of the facts matter. Society's going to read this. Here's what they don't know. That the subject was highly intoxicated on alcohol and liquor. Beer and liquor. That the subject had 132 empty mental health medication bottles in his house. That, folks, is not a medicine cabinet. That is where you put your plates and saucers in your kitchen. Those bags at the very top, those are pharmaceutical bags. Anybody want to guess what color stripes are on those bags? That would be orange and blue. Anybody know a school that's colored orange and blue? That would be called the University of Florida. That means the mental health people at the college that I worked at were prescribing drugs to somebody that was highly, highly agitated. If you don't know the facts about what happened in Virginia Tech, after Virginia Tech happened, the Department of Education, the DOE, said, no more. No more will we have people that have mental health issues that we're not monitoring in the college environment. That's what they said. Awesome. We're going to form a team. It's going to be called a BCT, Behavioral Consultation Team. It's going to have police, it's going to have mental health, and it's going to have dean's office people on that group. And those people are going to meet every week, 2 weeks, whatever, and they're going to discuss mental health concerns of students, staff, and faculty in their environment. And you know what? They did. Does anybody want to guess who the number one person of concern at that college was at that time? That guy that got shot. You know how many people knew that that guy was a concern? Nobody except the BCT. Why not? It's called HIPAA. Can't violate HIPAA. They tried to get him the day before. It didn't work. So they called again the next day because somebody was going out of control again, threatening to shoot the police when they got there. And we thought he was deceased. When we tore his door down, because we do that with every college student who threatens to kill themselves, we key in and we go in. This time we had to break in because he had secured the door too much. And he got shot. He had a big butcher knife. He had a table leg with a screw sticking out of it. He made the choices and he got shot. But the facts don't matter, folks. The facts don't matter. The fact that we drive fast in our patrol cars all the time to go to calls. The facts we shut our lights off before we get to some calls. Those facts don't matter. What matters is society's view. But what matters to me is, if you're a leader, you're courageous to tell them that. That's what matters to me. I told y'all about this, for y'all that sat through the thing. This is exactly what the media does. They break down what law enforcement does. This is why your umbrella has to be solid. This is why you can't have leaks in it. This is why you got to have solid integrity. What you're looking at in front of you is an email. When the shooting happened, the gentleman that was shot was a grad student at the college. His teacher, his professor that was the dean of the school, named Peter Whalens, came to the scene way before he was ever shot. What do you do in a mental health crisis? Let somebody that's familiar with him talk to him. He was his mentor through his PhD program. So Peter Whalens talked to him for like an hour through a window. For an hour and a half, we spent talking to this gentleman. We did everything we were supposed to. When Peter Whalens got done, when we decided to force entry, because we thought he'd killed himself, we shot him. We came back outside. I walked over to Peter Whalens, and I said, I am so sorry the way this ended. He says, Stacy, you guys did a fantastic job. I can't thank you enough for your effort. Y'all were better than anybody else in the college that even helped us in any capacity. Still, I know nothing about this guy. Peter Whalens is a college professor at a liberal college in this country. When he went home that night after his interview with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, he wrote a letter to the president of the college and to the university police chief. What do you think he said? You think it was positive? What do you think? Hello? No? Let me tell you what Peter Whalens said. Y'all are going to love this. He said, I want to register my thanks to the guys on the team last night. I've not looked at the press today, but I'm sure that you guys were probably coming under criticism. I spent a lot of time on the shoulder of the leader of the team, the Lieutenant Stacy, and I know very much how much effort went into trying to get a peaceful resolution. I appreciate the opportunity of being allowed into a very volatile situation to try to help Tofi out and to reassure the officers that he really was mentally ill in a great deal of personal turmoil. They listened to me and were extremely patient in a situation where they could have well forgiven for rushing in greater force. Please pass on my appreciation to Stacy and his squad who were there. I spent a great deal of time after the event standing close to the officer who fired the shots to tell his demeanor he was upset at the course of the events. I hope all of them are doing well. I am sure that they will be revisited much of this time in the next few weeks and months. I have already paid the events to the next 2 days many, many times in my mind. I'm convinced that the correct course of this followed, that the mind that the personnel at UPD come under is the very best of many entities involved. That's a professor at a liberal college. Guess what happened to that professor that morning? He was sent on a sabbatical back to his homeland of England and not interviewed again and never during the investigation. I tell you that, folks, because we know the directions these things are going to go. At what point is it going to stop and the courageous leader is going to step in? Where does it stop and where does it start? As you sit here as a deputy or officer and your spouse is sitting by you, they want somebody to stand up for you. They want somebody to stand up for you. But we have this thing called the art of self-preservation. If you can't figure that picture out, and you're not laughing yet, that is the most hilarious picture. The skin said, the heck with all the fruit. I'm getting off this gear, and I'm throwing you in, but I'm not going. Whew. That's a world, isn't it? Crazy picture, isn't it? I love that picture. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friend. $5. You'll drive 130 miles an hour to put your hand inside of somebody's leg and try to help, won't you? You've sacrificed your body in many ways in your career to help a stranger. You'll do it every day. But why won't you as a supervisor do the same thing for your subordinates? Even if they make a mistake. That's called courageous. That's the ethical thing to do. That's what you should be doing. Self-preservation doesn't make posters. Is that not awesome? My wife and I were talking about this today. She's like, doesn't make posters. Folks, listen. The easy way is to go down the stairs and get back off the hip mountain, isn't it? The way that changes the world is to maybe not worry about yourself. And I'm talking to your supervisors and your leaders in this room. And I'm even talking to you that are an officer or deputy, that are an FTO or an FTD, to a subordinate who is trying to start a career. I'm so amazed now, the FTO program has turned into the evaluation program. It ain't an evaluation program. It's a training program. But some people go, well, he's not doing good. Well, you know what? Then you suck. Train somebody. It's easy to sit over there and shoot darts at them. But this affects people's lives. This affects people's lives. I'm going to prove it to you. You are going to come to a fork in the road in this country, in your job. The chief talked about it. The chief said that he had to make a decision sitting in that room when the governor was hammering his people, did he not? He said he had to make a decision. Well, that's that fork in the road. Your career or their career? Make the one you want. But whatever decision you make, you live with it. There is one cool thing that I have in my life outside of my wonderful wife who speaks really eloquently on stage. Y'all like I plugged that, didn't you? And that is, when I go back to Gainesville, Florida, when I go back to a football game or back to a golf tournament or whatever, and I'm getting ready to go back and lead a church safety and security seminar over there, I can walk in with my head held high. You know why? Because I did the right thing. And I'm not talking about the night of the shooting. I'm talking about my role as a supervisor or commander during that incident as we talk about it. That's what's important. Take the fork in the road, pick your side, but you got to live with it. You got to live with it. Strong people stand up for themselves. Stronger people stand up for others. Unfortunately, this guy didn't get to experience it. How many of y'all remember this guy? Raise your hand if you know who this is. I'll tell you who he is. Richard Jewell. He was the security guard during the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta, Georgia, when he observed a backpack that had explosives in it, or was curious enough for him to start evacuating people. He evacuated people away from it, and it blew up, and people were injured and killed. But guess what happened? The media, society, and everybody started saying he was the bomber. And they destroyed this guy. Because nobody for that company that he worked for stood up and said, no, he wasn't the one. He did a fantastic job. Yeah, you know what? They held him a hero. You know when they held him a hero? Anybody know? When he died at 38 years old of diabetes and depression. See, folks, what people don't get in this room sometimes, especially if you're in a supervisor management role, people die over the way you deal with them. They might not die that day. They might not stick a gun in their mouth, but they're dying in so many slow ways because they don't have the faith that we have. They don't know there's a bigger picture out there. They don't know that God has a plan. And don't get me wrong, folks, I fought this battle and I felt sorry for myself and I went through this and my wife said, what is wrong with you, Stacy? Because only when I'm in trouble do I get called Stacy. What is wrong with you? Don't feel sorry for yourself. How would I know that 7 years later I'd be standing in front of a faith-based law enforcement conference in the beautiful town of Elkhart, Indiana? Don't y'all laugh. Y'all sweep y'all streets here. I ain't seen a beer can on the ground yet. Amazing. Come to Florida, I'll show you a bunch of nasty streets. But knowing that, I want you to watch this video because this is crucial to me. After we read this, Proverbs 11:3, the integrity of the upright guides them, but the crookedness of the treacherous destroys them. Oh, I'm not going to play the video. I got it in the wrong spot. Let me ask you real quick. I'm going to breeze through this because I want to make sure we get out on time for the Q&A. Y'all know these two men? Anybody know that man? Nobody knows this man? How about this man? Raise your hand if you know that man. Wow. Y'all have TV in Elkhart, Indiana? Or anywhere around this area? Are we all Amish in here? I have no idea. Cute buggies, though. Does this look familiar to you? Anybody know what that is? Other than a ship? How about this? Anybody look familiar to anybody yet? Somebody say, yeah, what is it? Italy. There's a rich cop over there, been to Italy. How about this? How about these guys, the leader? That looks more familiar to y'all? Anybody know who that guy is? How about this guy? Oh, that's Commander Scott Waddle. I'll explain who he is. How about that guy? Now we know who he is? Awesome. I had a chance. I got invited to speak at a law enforcement academy graduation years ago, back when I was important to somebody. And I showed up to speak, and this story had just happened. And this gentleman here, Scott Waddle, who was the commander of a sub that penetrated the hull, USS Greenville, that penetrated the hull of a Japanese fishing boat killing school kids. Y'all remember that story? Off the coast of Hawaii? I did a story about him, not related to this. And I basically talked about the fact that he had the courage to stand up and take responsibility for his decisions. And then this clown shows up that is the captain of the Costa Concordia. Pretty good for a white trash guy. Costa Concordia. That individual there was a captain. Y'all have heard this story. Someone make sure you understand it. They had to make decisions. The captain was asleep on the sub when the sub came up out of the surface and penetrated the bottom of the fishing vessel, killing fishing kids. This captain was coming out of port in Italy, when his boat ran aground and capsized. 9 dead, 32 dead. What decisions did the captains make? Captain Waddle, who was not even on the bridge when it happened, said this: "We remained overnight using images, intensifiers, equipment to try to locate any other survivors that may have made it to the surface." That's what Commander Waddle said. He said, as soon as it happened and the ship started sinking, we rescued people. That's what he said. This guy said, "I only left because I fell into a lifeboat when the ship listed suddenly. I was trying to get help." Remember he got off the ship before everybody else did? Y'all remember that? When it came down to decisions, the captain, Commander Waddle, said it was a case where teamwork on board the ship and I was primarily responsible. I failed. We failed. I'm responsible. I took action at the time that I thought were prudent, but in hindsight, we're not. Whoo! He said he's the boss. What did this guy say? "I wanted to slow the ship down, but the helmsman did not listen to my orders correctly. He steered in the wrong direction and we crashed." Yeah. Because he had a hot lady up on the bridge wing while the ship was doing what it was doing, if you know the story. But the end results are this, and here's why it's so important that you take a stance for the right thing. Here's why. Commander Waddle was released from the Navy, was released, never served in the Navy again, and King, the interview guy, King, whatever his name is on TV, he interviewed him and he said, I'll never forget this, he said, "But you weren't driving the ship." He said, "I'm the boss, it's my boat." He had more job offers and opportunities when he got out than you can imagine. And he wrote a book, and guess what he does, folks? He walks around and speaks. He runs his mouth for a living. Those who can't, teach. Isn't that amazing? You know what the next guy did? Anybody want to tell me what he did? Where'd he go? He went to jail. He did. He got a lot of years because he lied. He didn't take responsibility. I tell you that because whoever walks in integrity walks securely, but who makes his ways crooked will be found out. Do what is right, not what is easy. Don't be the weak link. Now, hey, can you look through that? Where's the IT guy at? Can you look through there and see why that video is not on there? Oh, that's why. You want to? Can you set it up for me real quick, please? You're awesome. Y'all give that guy a hand. He's running this whole show by himself. And you thought cops were arrogant. Speakers are the worst. All right, here we go.
You become the guy with leprosy. Nobody wants to be around you. So you lose all your contacts, you lose all your friends. Everybody thinks that whatever you say is not what happened. They only feed off of what they read. And law enforcement in general, we have a tendency to eat our own. We separate ourselves from those that are accused right out of the gate without knowing any facts. It's just a scary deal. And then our value outside of there is zero. We have no value at that point.
In my wildest dreams, I couldn't have imagined that they were going to fire him. That was not reprimanded, maybe. I couldn't see how they could have twisted everything that my brain had wrapped itself and comprehended. I couldn't see how they could have twisted all of that to firing him. None of that made sense.
See, what people don't know is if they couldn't fire me because they didn't do anything wrong. They could non-renew me because I had a contract that said there was no just cause for non-renewal, but they couldn't fire me. If they could have fired me, they would have fired me. They didn't have the ability to do that. But the media wrote that I was fired. So now what happens is I carry the word, Stacy Tell fired, as the headline under my name all over the world whenever I try to increase my value to society, whenever I try to get a job, whenever I try to move forward in life, that's what I carry. And then I started realizing, as I did over the next 2 years, 98 job applications. I interviewed all over this country, and nobody would hire me. Nobody. So I was having to reach out to my pension to live off of it to provide for my family because nobody would hire me. And I didn't understand why they wouldn't hire me until I realized what we do to people is not only do we release them from their job, but then we take their name, the only thing that's really given us in our life, our God-given name, and we destroy it. And then you don't have any opportunities. And so the ability for them to enhance and inflame these causes us to fight an uphill battle at our level.
My son, I do remember him crying. I don't think my daughter understood. And I think the feeling was, okay, you know, what's next? That's always what our thinking was, what's next? I think it was a lot of a blur being down there, being stuck in our house, going to the mall, and some guy turning around and saying, oh, you're that guy. And it wasn't a friendly, oh, you're that guy. It used to be, oh, you're the guy that travels with, you know, Coach. This was not.
It's almost like, I compare it to a lot of people when I talk about it. I compare it to being what a convicted child pedophile is, right? You're labeled and you're that guy. Except they did something illegal. The police didn't do anything illegal. I made a decision that night that had to be made, and I'm treated at that level.
Someone even wrote an article that we were this bad family. Another girl at a park from the newspaper took pictures of us and said, and wrote an article, you know, about the shooting. So we couldn't leave the house. I think that the worst part of all of that is when he couldn't get a job. We felt like we couldn't do it here. Everything, our whole history was following us. We wanted to change our names. You sell your wedding ring. You've got 2 weeks left of your rent. And you're thinking of the family who's going to take your children. And that you know they do a good job. And you and your husband are just going to leave and try to make ends meet.
So I had to leave. So I move over to the town I currently live in. And I have no desire to do police work. Who would? Who wants to do police work after the thing you put your heart and soul into for almost 18 years is destroyed? And now your name's destroyed. So I moved over here and I thought, well, I'll get a part-time job. I'll get a job to try to see what I can do over here. So I'd gotten a little contract job here and there doing little stuff. And so I went down to a local marina and I said, I want to go to work for y'all. I always wanted to work at a marina. I was in the Navy. I thought, what a great job. And they said, well, you know, this thing on the internet's a concern to us. I'm like, all I'm doing is tying up boats and talking to people. So they hired me part-time. They said, we'll hire you part-time and see how it goes. So there I was, my kid's first day at school. My kids come down to see me. And I am on the dock with a water hose washing off bird poop off a dock. That's my job. So my son, who was a freshman in high school, who saw his dad doing all these things and making all these decisions and running these big events and running events with, you know, 250 cops and 100,000 attendees and traveling the country and speaking all over the place, is standing there washing bird crap off of a dock. That's his job. And I kept trying to get jobs, and I kept trying to get jobs, and I kept thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? So I ran into some administrators at a local agency here. They asked me about my background. I told them what's going on. They said, if you ever want to come work for us, work for us. And I had to go back to police work. And I have this somber response, so I had to go back to police work. But I did. I mean, you know, if you're the manager, you don't want to go back and stock the shelves. You know, if you're the CEO, you don't want to go back and sweep the floors. And when you're at a level where you're starting to move forward in life and life's going to give you rewards for all your effort and you sacrifice your time with your spouse and your time with your kids and you put in all your effort, it didn't change because I was stealing from the kitty whenever I was in the house checking on a burglary call. No, it changed because we make a law enforcement decision that has to be made, that everybody else has all this time to evaluate, and you lose not your job, not your home and family situation, the ability to gain employment, the ability to provide for your family, and then you go back to where you started 20 years earlier.
something has to change.
You think that when you go through something like this, that if it could just give someone hope, purpose to continue, not to seek revenge, to just hang in there. If someone can get hope for all this, it was worth it.
I always say this when I speak. I always tell people that every human being is dealt a deck of cards. We all have a deck of cards right now. My question to you is, where is your deck of cards? Is it in your back pocket? Or do you pull out those cards and you throw down, I was fired, I was treated this way, I had this problem, my child had this issue, my wife had this issue, I had these issues. Did you lay all your cards out so people can learn? Do we use our deck of cards to impact our society? And I challenge people to do that. We're all going to get kicked. It's not the falling that hurts. It's a fight to get back to the top. I showed you that video because I wanted you to kind of see the effects. You kind of know me a little bit now. You had a chance to listen to me. You got a chance to listen to my wife. Which, by the way, that's the first time you've seen that, right, Martha? My wife's never watched these videos. These videos have been out almost 2 years. It tells you what she thinks about this whole thing. We are not Gator fans, by the way. So I wanted you to see the video because I think it's important as we get ready to close this down for the 3:30 session's ending. There's not an answer of why. I can tell you a bunch. There's not an answer there's not a blame game here. You know God had a hand in it because I wouldn't be here now. I don't know what the answer is. But let me kind of backpedal and tell you where we're at now. God used Travis Yates to run into a class that I had to go to attend. For him to listen to my story, who I told my story to a bunch of other people, but he didn't listen. He told that story to a friend of his who writes books named Vicki Newman, who then wrote an article that was published on LawOfficer.com that led to me being right here today. But it also led to some other things that I think are important for you to understand. It led to the desire to create a foundation called LEAN, Law Enforcement Advocacy Network, because what's happened in this country is when a law enforcement officer gets involved in a high-profile critical incident and the media begins to attack, who can defend him? Who can defend her? Well, let's back up. Their own employees at the agency is not allowed to talk by policy publicly about the incident. The command staff, unless they are a sheriff, works for a city manager or a commission board, and they control those decisions. So you say, well, another agency can. No, they can't, because we all have policies that say that. But a foundation called LEAN can. The motto for the foundation called LEAN that I was involved in, that I came up with an idea on, is the motto is that we're a voice for those who can't and a faith and a platform for those who can. You know what? Let LEAN show up. Let LEAN stand next to the protesters. Let LEAN get in front of the camera and say something in support of the officers. Let LEAN tell the truth on the camera. Every media likes a contradiction. But you know what's going to happen? When that cop is fired, because they still will be, or they'll resign under stress, when that happens, then let's give them a platform to tell their story. I got my chance. Why not? Why not reach out to the ones that are out there in the media that are hung out and bring them up and let them tell their story? You think it's the same that is being portrayed? I want to tell you about the results of this shooting and then I'll be done. Because I am right on time, Chief. Where you at? I love picking on administrators. Five officers involved in that shooting that night. One that didn't really have anything to do with it. He took a rifle inside it and didn't have an opportunity to take action. He was never promoted within the agency, had a master's degree, went to another small agency until the FBI hired him, and he lives in Puerto Rico as a FBI agent. The one that shot the taser, the first two taser cartridges, the one that had handcuffed the kid at the stop sign, he's still there. He got lucky. He married a female lieutenant, and that relationship has kept him employed. That works out well for him. The sergeant, who at 24 years old finished up his career, retired, and retired under the worst depression, marriage issues, divorce issue. It just was horrible for him. Just a great guy. He and I worked together for a long time. You know where I'm at. I'm standing here in front of you. But the young man who pulled the trigger that night, Keith Smith was the person they wanted that night, folks. Keith Smith was the one they wanted. Keith Smith, when I came in 4 days after the shooting to meet with my command staff, my chief met me in a parking lot, and she said to me specifically this. The president's taken over the investigation. They've hired an attorney. The media responsibility has been taken out of our hands, and they want somebody to fall. Fork in the road? Courageous or not courageous? The art of self-preservation? It's all kicking in. And here was the answer from her. Keith has his issues in his past. He got caught with a stripper in a parking lot of Krispy Kreme donut off duty. Can't make this up. He's hanging out with people throwing eggs at prostitutes. He didn't throw them, but he was there. And now he shot the first shooting ever at this college, and it happened to be somebody of a different race. It looks like that'll be the answer. I said, he didn't do anything wrong. He doesn't go in that room unless he's placed in that room. I made those decisions to go in that room. He didn't go in that room unless I put him there. And if you don't believe me, you can Google the audio tapes from the IA and listen to the investigation later on. And she backed away slowly at the fork in the road and said, I'm not losing my career over this. I'm not losing my job. And we didn't talk again for 4 months. And I was unemployed 4 months later. Keith Smith has moved on. A year later, when he didn't have the umbrella over him that was given to him under our time, they fired him for cussing somebody out on a traffic stop that had fled from him. Fired him. He called me up. He said, Stacy, they just fired me. I said, you want to stay in police work? He said, yes. So I called another courageous leader, a man who runs an agency that has no fear of what people think, and he hired him in Titusville, Florida. He did 3 years there, was officer of the year, made SWAT, and now he is the lead trainer for all the SWAT teams in NASA around the country. And here's the best part. When Travis and I speak on courageous leadership, guess who else speaks with us? Keith Smith. You got to lay your head down at night. I'll never forget my wife's comments that one night she looked at me and she said something to the effect that if you'd have taken the escape or if you wouldn't have taken responsibility, I don't think I'd have any respect for you. And I'm thinking, honey, we lost almost a six-figure job. You're living in a trailer. What do you mean you got no respect? You got respect. You know why? Because you always stand up for what's right. Get off your deck of cards, pull them out of your pocket, lay them out, impact the world, change society. Thank you so much, Breaching the Barricade. You guys are awesome. Thanks, y'all.